Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckley SAB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
San Antonio District Judge resigns after a federal corruption probe.
A former San Antonio, Texas judge goes to federal prison after pleading guilty to accepting bribes in exchange for rigging cases in his court. Angus McGinty committed the ultimate judicial sin. Why did you do it?
I did it because I was foolish.
Listen to How to Bribe a Judge on RevolverPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I fucking love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that burst next.
Big jab there from Duffy and Brett Mears. Hurt now.
There are a couple of absolutely self-involved bullshit artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Oh, set your clocks forward, folks. Set them forward, right? Spring forward, fall back. Sunday morning, March 13th, 2022. It's episode 340 of the Anik and Florian podcast. Ken Flo's rocking a beanie. It's a pretty good look for you. Pretty cold, I'd imagine, in Charlotte, North Carolina today, if South Florida is any indicator.
Yeah, dude, it's a little chilly here, little chilly. Dealing with a little bit of cold for the first time in a little while. It was 80 last week, and now it's freezing today.
Bouncing all over the place.
Yeah.
Feels like hurricane force winds in South Florida yesterday. But I like it. You know, I like the weather variable. I actually had a hoodie on, but I wanted to show off my brand new AF Pod 2020.
Sick.
Kelly Green t-shirt, so we got rid of the hoodie. But it's great to be with everybody. We'll be talking to Raymond Longo in about 15 minutes. He actually asked to come on in the AM today, so he must have some sort of private. Maybe Dougie fucking Green gets the 1 p.m. slot for a back-to-back week. But we'll recap UFC Fight Night, Santos versus Ankalaev with Raymond. Also get his thoughts on Aljamain Sterling because UFC 273 is coming up quickly. And then some predictions for the UFC's return to London, England for the first time in 3 years coming up this Saturday on ESPN Plus. But we begin with headlines. And of course, we will begin with last night's main event. A little bit of a listless main event, if I'm being honest, between Magomed Ankalaev and Thiago Santos. By the way, big, big night for Ken Flo, 5-1.
Finally.
Only one you lost was Terrence McKinney, whom you took a flyer on as a 2-1 underdog. But it was Ankalaev over Thiago Maheta Santos, 49-46 times 2, 48-47 for the third dissenting judge. I don't know that there's all that much to unpack in terms of the fight. I know the commentators expressed some surprise as to the approach from Magomed Ankalaev. But ultimately, the first order of business is winning. He did so decisively, and he maintains his momentum in a wide-open division. Your thoughts on Ankalaev in the main event last night, kid?
You know, it wasn't one of those performances where you're kind of like, hey, yeah, absolutely, this guy might be the champion. It gave me a little bit of doubt, but it didn't ruin his chances of becoming a champion in my mind. You know, still a lot of potential. And I think the approach, or maybe the fight, was not as great as people anticipated because of two reasons. Number one, you know, I think you always have to respect Santos, right? Here's a guy who has a lot of power. You have to give him that respect. You get hit by him once and you go, okay, this guy can put me out. Number two, it also has to do with Santos. Santos has taken more of a conservative approach. Even when he comes forward, he's not throwing these blitzing type combinations. He's not trying to take your head off all the time. He uses his strikes sparingly, and tends to kind of, not bring the fight as much as he used to, it seems anyway. So I think that kind of had a lot to do with it. And Ankalaev isn't just a crazy, you know, run forward, face first approach type of fighter. He is very technical. He's very calculated. And I thought we were going to see an amazing fight the way that first round was going when he put Santos to one knee there. But, it kind of just, I guess, fizzled off a little bit. But still, Ankalaev is a fantastic fighter.
One popular take seems to be that Thiago Santos is just not the same guy since the knee injuries and the accompanying invasive surgeries and everything else. And I guess I would throw that one at you. I mean, we talked last week, Brian Petrie and I did during the Main Event Challenge, about how we thought that Santos was actually the guy that gave John Jones the best fight at 205 pounds and came the closest to beating him. But yeah, man, he just seems a little bit reluctant. And even in a situation like last night, in which it seemed like he needed to finish late, there were times when he went for it, but I don't know, man. Cody Mero turned the fight off, and he doesn't do that very often.
Yeah, listen, I think that that could very well be the case. I've never suffered a terrible knee injury like that, but we have seen certain guys in the past that either their bodies or the surgery itself or maybe some kind of mental crutch prevents them from putting a lot of weight on that leg that was injured. So who knows what the situation is? He definitely has taken a more conservative approach. Doesn't seem to be throwing with the same amount of power and aggression that he did in the past, it seems anyway. Still a dangerous guy, but I think that Thiago Santos that we saw fight against John Jones perhaps might be gone. Who knows?
Remember that Steve Bosse highlight back in 2015 in Hollywood, Florida? Thiago Mata Santos was certainly one of my favorites when I was coming up calling fights for the UFC. So, Cody, you can throw the top 10 at 205 pounds in the private chat if you'd be so inclined. But I kept thinking about Jamahal Hill last night, right, and how he maximized that main event showcase several weeks ago. And not to say that Ankalaev did not. And I also had in my notes as I was watching the fight this morning that for Magomed Ankalaev, if he fights for the championship, Kenny, you know, people aren't going to be talking about this performance or how it lacked style points. I mean, he's had plenty of highlights over the years, but you have to think promotionally right now, you know, where is he relative to a guy like Jamahal Hill, you know? And to me, it's like I would be propping up a guy like Jamahal Hill stylistically. Not only, I mean, I think both of these guys have championship ceiling, but, you know, I just kept thinking about Jamahal Hill and how I'd be propping that guy up. If I was a promoter.
Yeah, listen, I think Jamahal Hill is the more marketable guy. I think he is the more dangerous guy in a lot of ways. Ankalaev, you know, can always fall back on that wrestling style as well. He can mix things up. I thought he went to that wrestling game a little bit too late in the fight. I would like to see him use that maybe a little earlier to put Santos on his back. But I do think that if you want to promote another main event, or if you want to get a guy who's going to fight for the belt, who's going to have that it or danger factor, Jamahal Hill's that guy. Ankalaev may have missed that opportunity a little bit last night. Yeah.
So I know Alexander Rokic was tweeting that he was watching that fight intently. Presumably he will be fighting Jan Błachowicz, as we've discussed. I know that fight was to headline here 13 days from now. Glover Teixeira, of course, against Jiří Procházka. But Ankalaev's right there at number six, you know, Jamahal Hill 10 or so. A lot of the other guys are booked up. I mean, Dominic Reyes, I guess, is lurking, but I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised to see Jamahal Hill and Ankalaev cross paths at some point in time. Mm-hmm. But very interesting to see how it all plays out at 205 pounds. All right, co-main event at bantamweight, Song Yadong over Magic Marlon Moraes. This is a signature win. I mean, say what you want about Moraes' current form, but this is the biggest win of the career to date for Song Yadong. What do you have for us, kid, on the co-main event?
I agree. There's no doubt about it. This was his biggest win for sure. The approach is out there, right? The blueprint is out there on how to beat Moraes. You got to stay in his face. You got to pressure. You got to return every time he throws a shot at you. And you got to throw combinations and back him up. And that's exactly what Song Yadong did. I did think it was a good matchup for him. He's got some serious power. He's very athletic. One of the few guys I think that can match the speed and athleticism of someone like Marlon Moraes. The difference, or that little edge factor, is the fact that he still has a tremendous chin and his conditioning is phenomenal. It's even better than that of Marlon Moraes. So this was a tough one for Moraes. Big win for Song Yadong. I think it put his name on the map. He is someone to be respected for sure. Was before that, but even more so after last night. And talk about making the most out of your opportunities. He certainly did that.
Yeah, and we've talked in the past about Song Yadong getting a favorable split decision here or there and maybe hasn't had, you know, the fanfare that would come with having just one loss in nine UFC fights coming in. But he certainly kept the judges out of it. There was nothing close about this fight. I also had written down Keith Peterson. I thought he saved Marlon Moraes some extra punishment there. And I think that just speaks to Keith knowing the athlete and obviously knowing that New Jersey Northeast circuit intimately and knowing Marlon Moraes and knowing where he's at this stage of his career. Song Yadong was calling for a fight with Dominic Cruz. I know Team Alpha Male would enjoy preparing for Dominic Cruz again at this stage of Cruz's career. Any appetite from you for Song Yadong and Cruz next? It seems like Cruz and Aldo is going to happen, but I guess.
Wow.
Well, Are you breaking news right now, Anik? It would seem to me, let me just say, promotionally, you got to think that's the direction in which they would want
to.
Okay.
So I don't even care about Song Yadong now. I don't want to see the fight. You just killed it. I mean, listen, it's okay. But Aldo Cruz?
Yeah.
Sign me up.
Yeah, right.
Go
Aldo Cruz makes a lot of sense.
Go on, John.
And I don't even necessarily know where the fighters are relative to the rankings. I think a Song Yadong fight would interest Cruz, but not nearly as much as some of the guys ranked above him. And I don't believe Song Yadong qualifies there. But again, if you're talking about the Chinese fighters, and I'm bullish on some of these Chinese fighters, younger fighters, even Rong Zhu and guys who have lost fights recently. Mm-hmm. But Song Yadong, Kemflo, it's hard to argue against, right? 10 UFC starts. Only one setback, and I think right now you'd have to argue among the men he is China's best hope for immediate UFC glory, despite the fact that he is in a ruthless, thankless, unforgiving division. All right, featherweight feature bout, Sadiq Yusuf over Alex Caceres. I mean, clean fight for Sadiq, I thought. 30-27 times two, 29-28 from the third judge. I mean, you and Brian last week, I think, set this one up pretty well. And Caceres just didn't have a lot of answers. You know, his lower half was compromised courtesy of Yusuf's fine work. And, you know, Sadiq sort of valued the octagon time, the 15 minutes. He hasn't had a lot of it. What do you have for us on Sadiq Yusuf over Alex Caceres?
Yeah, you know, I think this was a solid performance for him overall. I think I would have liked to seen him get a finish. Obviously, Caceres is riding high on a good win streak. A lot of things are coming together for Caceres, and he's tough, dude. He really is sneaky tough. He had his moments early in the fight, almost took his back and stuff like that. But Sadiq stayed calm, was able to claw back into the fight and win every round, I thought. Was effective. And that's the way I saw it. You know, I saw him stopping a lot of those takedown attempts you know, getting top position if they were going to hit the ground just based on his anti-wrestling and stuff. Caceres isn't the best takedown artist right now, but he is crafty and he is slick. And he knows how to survive and do well based on his experience and his interesting striking style. But that's pretty much the way I saw it. You know, I thought it was a solid performance overall. And, you know, Caceres is tough.
All right, back to the light heavyweight division now. Fighters ranked 11 through 15. Paul Craig, Johnny Walker, Ryan Spann, Jimmy Crute, Dustin Jacoby. And I believe that Khalil Roundtree Jr.'s next opponent is going to come out of that mix. This dude is absolutely frightening. I don't know what his ceiling is. I know mentally he's in a very good place in terms of his focus. We have had a lot of memorable fighter meetings with Khalil Roundtree Jr. over the years when he has been at different places in terms of his mental development. But my God, Kenny, I mean, it literally feels like you're like releasing the bull, you know?
Yeah, he's always had a lot of potential. He's an excellent athlete. He's very fast and very powerful. But yeah, I think mentally there's been times where he hasn't been there. It's like, where's the guy that starts that dude in like 15 seconds? Where's that guy? But now we're seeing, I think, a more consistent approach. I think he's making better game time decisions as well as far as his adjustments during a fight. He's coming in with more of a focus, more of a confidence. And, you know, I hate using those cliches of like, what is your why? But he seems to have a very strong why. He understands his purpose now. I mean, talk about being a powerful striker. He had a very powerful speech after his fight as well. Very emotional. And I think that says a lot. And I think it's very important to, you know, I talk about this spiritualizing your warfare, of having something that goes beyond or giving you a very strong why of why you're doing what you're doing. Because it can get very monotonous training, right? Having that daily grind can wear on you mentally, physically. So if you're not inspired by something, if you don't have a true hardcore purpose of being the best martial artist you can be, get out of the game. It's too dangerous. Go do something else for a paycheck. Some people can't. Okay, I understand that.
Yeah.
But as far as the danger factor of this game, you have to be very well motivated and inspired every single day, no matter what. This game's way too tough. And for Khalil, I think he has that. And it was very much present in the way that he fought and the way that he explained himself after this fight. I think he's a special individual that is bound for greater things outside of the sport. I don't know what that is exactly, but I love his story. I was inspired by it. I wish continued success for that guy. I think he's got a lot of charisma, and I do think he's a very talented fighter as well. So I wish him the best. It was awesome to see him get that kind of a win, because Robertson is tough and can present a lot of problems for a lot of guys in that division. So Roundtree getting the win in the fashion that he did was pretty special.
It was an interesting night for the light heavyweight division, and this fight was an interesting juxtaposition compared to the main event, right? Because if Khalil Roundtree Jr. was fighting Magomed Ankalaev on this night, maybe it goes 25 minutes and it's a tactical fight. Maybe it doesn't, right? But it's like during this main event, as I'm watching on mute, trying to put a kid to, I watched it this morning in its entirety, but it's like, you know, you can step away for a minute, or I certainly felt like I could. And then the Roundtree Jr. fight is like, dude, I want to step away. I'm about to see a fatality. I kind of want to walk away for a minute. Like, this was a really violent night at times. Yeah. And we'll get to Chris Moutinho. I don't know if you saw the highlight of him.
I did not
getting,
of that.
I mean, just blasted by Guido Canetti, who's our age, you know? I mean, a standing knockout. And thankfully, it stopped. It was stopped when it was. I know some people disagree with that. But, dude, like, I don't know, man. There's something about Roundtree Jr. and the way he fights. And now he's got a little bit of momentum. I think that more elite matchups could potentially bring out the best in him. I mean, certainly there are some difficult stylistic challenges as he climbs the ladder, but he's such a good dude, and I'm very happy for him to get a win like this. All right. You and Brian Petrie both like Terrence McKinney, and nearly paid off for you.
So close.
He had a huge knee and a huge moment early against Drew Dober, and obviously we know McKinney's a stud, especially early. What were your thoughts on Dober's rally for another big UFC knockout for him?
Dude, I mean, Dober is tough as hell. I didn't need to see last night's fight to know that,
right.
But it's just extra confirmation, extra whipped cream with a cherry on top that this dude is a savage. To stay focused and to believe in yourself after getting knocked down several times and taking a beating, dude, in round one, getting a start like that, is very tough. Typically you see guys, okay, I got to get into at least round two to get something going for myself. But man, he kept the pressure, kept firing back. And that was the key. You know, I think for McKinney, he obviously still young in the game, as far as fighting at a UFC level, he has a lot of firepower, but to me, and of course he took the fight on short notice, but what he was throwing out there, it didn't seem sustainable to me. Like it seemed like he was dead set on finishing that fight in round one. I think that hurt him. But anyway, Drew Dober, man, what a beast. Huge win for him, given the fact that, you know, that he did not get a good start.
Drew Dober now in a tie for third all time in terms of the most knockouts in UFC lightweight history with six.
Wow.
So just two back of Dustin Poirier, who is the all-time leader at 155 pounds. All right. I do want to get to Tony Ferguson and Michael Chandler, a fight announcement that surfaced since we were last on the air. But quickly on the middleweights, Alex Pereira and Bruno Silva. It was Pereira 30-27 times three. Oh, and it looks like Ray Longo.
Oh, shit. We're off.
Yeah.
Which way are we going?
Bring on the handsome on a Sunday morning. Look at you. You look like you've been awake for hours.
Look at that shirt, the John Ed.
Yeah.
Look at that. I'm going to go get headphones. Wait a minute.
All right. Take your time. Yeah. The Led Zeppelin mugs are sold out, but the John Anakin shirts are 50% off. Kenny, while Ray, you know, puts his junk in the screen and goes,
yeah, nice crotch
headphones.
Pereira
Silva, as advertised. What an awesome way to kick off the main card.
Dude, he's a beast. That was a great fight. A little nervous for him at times, by the way. that head was kind of a little high for my liking. And he was getting caught there. But again, Pereira is a savage. I thought he's experiencing a lot early on in his career where he's dealing with the grappling. He's answering those questions. He's finding a way to get back to his feet. He's taking shots, right? So I hope that he's going to learn from all of this experience. For everyone who is excited about him facing someone like Adesanya at this point, you know, I have to heavily favor Adesanya, right? And that goes without saying, but Pineda hits so damn hard. It seems like he's made out of steel and he's very mentally tough. It seems where he knows how to respond and fire back even when he's dealing with that kind of adversity. So he's learning very quickly, man. And that's a good sign. So I think he's on his way to improving, and I wouldn't be surprised where he kind of experiences a little bit of volatility early on in his career. And then just goes on this crazy win streak and just murders everybody. Because he certainly has that potential. But I think it was another really good performance for him, because the guy that he faced is really tough.
I can't wait to see Bruno Silva in terms of his career in the UFC moving forward. You know, I said last week about a different fight, like it's a lazy take when you say, oh, I hate that these guys have to fight each other right now, you know, but I did think that this was asking a lot of Bruno Silva to beat Alex Pereira, and he was unable to do so, obviously. And I just, I don't know. I just am very curious to see how they match make Bruno Silva moving forward. But Pereira's the real deal. And Danbury, Connecticut's got another one. So, like, if you're watching on TV and not on audio, we're in a three shot right now looking at Ray Longo's blinds. And I don't know if it's too much of me to ask our producer, Ray, but, like, can we do all this off the air next time and not on the air? Like, is that too much of me to ask in episode 340?
Can we keep it real?
I guess. I don't know. I mean, you are. Oh, Jesus Christ. Unbelievable T-shirt.
Come on. Keep it real, John.
By the way, John, the good thing is with the crotch shot that he gave us when he stood up, we probably gained another 10,000 subscribers.
Oh, you know? God.
So, at least.
People want real, live, organic action.
Right. Right. So we were talking a little. It's great to see you, man. You're looking lean and lean, man.
Oh, yeah. Rough weekend, man. I didn't even think I was getting back. I didn't think they canceled a bunch of flights.
Yeah, so I guess there's some snow on the East Coast. So where were you, and how did it go where you were?
Well, I had Dylan Montello fighting an Eagle FC. It didn't go his way. Good fight against an undefeated prospect. It was a unanimous decision, but it was a good, really good scrap.
How was the show? How was it being in Miami? Thanks for the phone call.
Unbelievable. Yeah,
How was it?
I thought it was all right. It was quick. I was in and out, but they ran the show. Khabib did a great job with the show. It was run well. All the transportation, all the, ancillary stuff was great. And, that was it. They had some good fights.
You like Kenny's beanie?
I feel we're on the ski slope somewhere. We're in Vermont right now, I feel.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
somewhere
man.
In New England for sure. So what, how much of – what is he doing? He missed the showtime today.
What's he going through something?
No, he missed the showtime today. He thought we were starting an hour later than we were, so he threw
on
the beanie.
I pulled the longo.
Oh, man.
Hey, so I got a few things to get to with you today, Aljamain Sterling chief among them. How much of last night's main card were you able to watch?
I saw the whole main card. I saw 90% of the fights.
So how about Khalil Roundtree Jr.? I've watched that body kick that it hit most of Robertson's arm. Thank God, because we could be talking about a funeral, you know?
Yeah.
But my God, man, I'm always the one who's sitting on here saying, oh, MMA is superficially violent. Go watch football or hockey. But like last night, if you're watching MMA, that's the most violent fucking sport on the planet.
Oh no, that was violent. It wasn't. It was the
that
attention,
whole fight.
I think
the whole yeah, the fight. Whole, it was like,
well, he came out different. You know, one time he was in Thailand. All he's doing is throwing Thai kicks. This time he's in a crouch. But man, when he let it go, man, he let it go. And you're right. If that kick is off by a couple inches. And Carl's a good fighter, man. He's been I know his trainer. He's been in the gym. He's definitely a good fighter. But I think when you're in that position, Kenny, correct me if I'm wrong, you see anything coming at you like that, you're just freaking out. I think so. It could have hit his arm, John, but the thought probably was like, holy shit, that guy's kicking my head while I'm down.
Yeah, I thought Herb Dean was gonna stop. I thought he was stopping the fight because he thought it was an illegal blow, and I was like, oh my god. But it takes a lot of balls to throw that kick.
Oh
when
yeah,
without too. I mean, because it had that stink on it, where he's like, trying to slice him in half with it. And thank God he was precise with it and hit the body instead of the head. Because Robertson's head could have been outside the cage.
Without a doubt, you know that there was something about Cahill that you felt the violence, man. You know. Yeah.
And I then felt that watching UFC 5 again.
Oh. Yeah, it had that feel to it where it was Gerard Gordeau kicking that guy's tooth out of his mouth. Yeah. Remember the big
the sumo wrestler, yeah. Oh man.
Oh, we get Frozen Longo for the first time. That's new, huh?
It's me. I don't know if that was on my end or your end.
No, it's all good. But yeah, no, I just had to lead with that because I
that was violent.
Oh my gosh! Oh my
god! And does
gosh.
Anybody know what he was talking about afterwards? What the heck is he doing in New York? What is saying he was looking for something?
I don't
right?
know.
He was.
I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, it looks like he wants to do something. But if there's anything I could do to help that guy, 100% would. I just couldn't figure out what he was even saying. You know.
All right. Like well, maybe one of our listeners will put it together at Ray Longo MMA, and you can message Ray. Yeah. What's going on? Anything to help somebody looking to do something.
Yeah, no, he sounded that was intense afterwards. Yeah. So, yeah, if there's anything I could ever do to help that guy, I mean, I don't know him, but
yeah,
the backstory seems phenomenal.
Wildly entertaining main card opener, I thought, between Pereira and Bruno Silva. Did you see that fight?
It was a good fight.
So good.
I'll tell you, and Silva, man, Silva could throw, but the other guy's accurate. And he can also throw. And he looks, you know, he's very comfortable. He's precise. He's a sharpshooter.
Those body shots were sick.
Yeah, no. He's got his game down, man. And when he opens up, he opens up. So he looks really good. I mean, the only thing, it looks like he's getting up there in age. So he's got to, I think, make a move, you know, probably quicker more than later. You know, right. And he's got the experience. He did good getting back to his feet. He looked good. Yeah, you could see why he's a problem, and I could see him giving Izzy a problem just with his length and how he, you know, they're kind of similar. So I'd pay to watch that fight.
So Magomed Ankalaev ran the main event, extended what is one of the longest winning streaks in light heavyweight history. What were your thoughts on what the fan base didn't seem to love as a main event?
Is that they didn't like that fight?
Well, I didn't like it, candidly. I mean, for me, I wasn't wildly entertained. You know, I started watching Love is Blind on Netflix. You
know? What were you watching?
Love is Blind. They like start dating in a pod and there's a wall between them. They don't know I think I'm probably too shallow at the end of the day, but they don't know what the other person looks like and they end up getting engaged. And then,
really? It sounds like my marriage.
Yeah. You're kind of like an arranged marriage or no?
Can you buy those pods anywhere? I'd actually like to try that now.
Put a wall between you two. Where did you meet your wife? No, that's not what the listeners came for.
Yeah, no. You don't want to know.
Yeah, no. I do want to know what you thought of the main event, though, because at the time, you can get a tactical, technical fight or whatever.
Right.
You know, I thought the outcome here was clear. I knew that I could go take a piss, and I probably wasn't going to miss a finish. That's all.
I mean, look, that's the way it turned out. I didn't feel, I felt at any given point in time, something big was going to happen, but you know, Thiago had a, Santos had a problem with the, you know, the range, and he was leaping in. There was some wild stuff, and the other guy was a little respectful also. No, they, I think there was too much respect because they both carry big power, maybe, but, I don't know, Kenny. The Santos, I thought, just, you know, was taking wild shots. He wasn't really working his way in, and I don't think that's an easy thing to do against the other guy because of his – he was holding the range pretty good too, but he wasn't going for it either, really. So I think that was just came down to respect because they're big guys that could end the fight at any point in time. But get me going with something. I don't know. I was delirious. Right. I was just happy to be home at that point.
So I get a text from my twin brothers at a wedding in Arizona, and the text just says Chris Moutinho, right? Because I was with my kids. I was not watching the prelims. I know Kenny hasn't seen this. Did you see
That fight I missed. What happened in that fight?
For the second time in as many UFC appearances for Chris Moutinho, he had the referee stop a fight and he lost by like standing knockout. You know, this time it wasn't Sugar Sean O'Malley. It was 42-year-old Guido Canetti.
Wow.
Landing bombs. And I thought, honestly, I believe on the broadcast, they initially said, oh, I don't know. And then I think they came back from that statement because it was merciful as far as I'm concerned, the stoppage, you know, scary. It's like his head's a brick. Moutinho, he's so tough. And I don't know. I'd be curious to talk to Tyson Chartier and some of the people who are around him. But it's like, you know, you remember what happened to Colby Covington a week ago, that Masvidal shot where his head just spins, Ray, as you put. And Moutinho, his head's just like a fucking block, man. But it's like, I don't know. I just seeing him absorb these bombs, not good.
I think the misconception is, and I'm sure Ray would agree with this, but it's like, just because you have a great chin doesn't mean it's good for you to get hit in the head. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like,
100%.
It's there's still a brain in there, and you know, there's damage being taken. So I don't know. I didn't see the fight. I have to go back and watch it, but yeah, it's not a good sign, you know, getting hit that much in just a couple UFC fights. Maybe he needs to, you know, reconsider things and take a smarter approach. I don't know.
Yeah, and Kenny's 100% right. I mean, even when I get a guy with a good chin, it's nice for me to know that just in case they get into something like that, he's going to be fine because you've seen it. But you always want that as the last resort. You know what I mean? You have a great chin. Let's keep it that way until you absolutely need it. But don't go in there and just get – yeah, that's unfortunate that two times in a row that happened to him because he seems like a nice kid. That's awful.
Yeah. All right. A couple other things that I want to get to. Kenny, I want to lead with you on this if I could. So Tony Ferguson and Michael Chandler are going to fight, I believe, at UFC 274 in May. So the last win for Tony was at UFC 238, June 8th of 2019 against Donald Cowboy Cerrone. His last fight was Ferguson's UFC 262 May of last year against Beneil Dariush. I think it's a tricky matchup for Tony at this stage of his career, but I'm excited that he's back. Ray, we'll get your thoughts on the back end, but Kenny, your thoughts on Ferguson Chandler here coming up in about 2 months.
Well, I mean, it's like if I'm a matchmaker and my job is to deliver the most exciting fights that I can, you know, putting a fight together between Chandler and Ferguson's the way to go. It's like, how does that fight not deliver? I think it should. Now, is that the fight that I would want for Tony Ferguson if I'm his friend? I don't know. I mean, Chandler is a beast. But then again, for Chandler, he fights right into Tony's wheelhouse too. I mean, this guy just gets in front of your face and starts trading. Now, he's probably the more powerful guy, right? I mean, definitely the better athlete. But Ferguson is a savage as well, man. And he's not going to stop coming forward. And he's going to cut you up with elbows and, you know, get funky with his grappling. So I think it'll be an exciting fight. I agree. I think it's a tough matchup for Tony, but, you know, it is a different time. I think if this was the Tony from, you know, a few years ago, I would have much more confidence in Tony, but I still think he can win that fight. You know, I really do. I think that certainly Chandler has more firepower, But I'm not surprised they put that fight together. As a matchmaker, looking at it through matchmaker's eyes, that's going to be a very entertaining fight while it lasts.
Yeah, fans are juiced. Michael Chandler, minus 330. Tony Ferguson, plus 270, the underdog. Ray, what do you think about that fight? Big one at 55 there.
Yeah, I agree with Kenny. If it was 5 years ago, totally different ball game. I just think to get back on the winning track against Chandler, who he wants to get another win, who's powerful. He could put that fight where he wants it to. I do believe he'll ragdoll him with the wrestling if he chose to do that, but he might choose to stand in front and fight with him. But I don't know if that's even Tony's game at this point anymore. You know, that's the interesting part, because he's been through some wars, and I don't know. I would think minus 330 is pretty accurate.
All right. Aljamain Sterling is now less than 4 weeks out from his date with Piotr Jan. What can you tell us about Aljo's progression? You getting excited?
Very, very much so. That right before I left for Florida, he crushed a great workout. His sparring looks good. He's in a pretty good spot. He's strong as hell. The injury's not a problem, which I think is for him is the biggest thing.
Yeah.
And so far so good.
All right, that's good. And any update on Merab Dwalishvili other than him chasing the opposite sex there in Vegas a couple weeks ago?
No, that stayed exactly the same. Okay. But he looks great. It's great to have him back in the gym too. But nothing. Who'd they make? Font against Rivera?
Yeah, Font and Cheeto in a main event.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm surprised he wasn't thrown in there. But I guess they're going to give him Sanhagen maybe. That's the only available guy. Oh, wow. So
it's going to be fascinating.
It's another great fight.
Yeah, I mean, Khamzat Chimaev and Gilbert Burns, that was the fight that we all thought was going to happen like last November, and that's finally been finalized. But I say every other week on the show, it's going to be fascinating to see who they match Merab up with. You know,
I think it's Sanhagen. I would have thought the Font fight would have been a great fight for him, but they chose to go another way. You know, he was injured, even though I can't really tell in the gym at this point, but he did break his collarbone or something.
Yeah,
I don't know. He's whipping around like nothing's going on. So I think it's 95% better.
All right, my man. Well, we'll let you go. And hey, next time you come down to South Florida, don't be afraid. Hey, send me a text message. I know you were in and out this time, but I would have banged it down to Miami, buy you a cup of cold brew or something, you know?
Yeah, I thought you were working. How far are you from Miami?
About 50 minutes, 5-0.
Oh, I wouldn't.
It's really just about the child care. I got three children, 10 and under, so I'm always doing something. But always got time for my guy, Ray Longo. I'll get on the fucking RPL train. Are you kidding me? all right. Well, unless you have anything else, I will wish you a great day and a better evening and let you get on with your Sunday. You got Dougie Green coming up 1 p.m. today or what?
Oh, yeah, 12:30. Getting out of here right after this.
All right, Doug. Don't cancel late. Wow. Longo's fucking charge you for the private if you cancel late.
Man, this guy's gonna be ecstatic with that shout out.
Oh, is he? Got another one earlier, I think, off the top of the show. Dougie fucking Green, man. Let's go, man. Tighten up that guard, man. Raise your guard. man. Hey,
all right.
We'll talk to you next week, all right?
All right, guys. Take
Much
it easy.
Love. Right.
Take it. Take care, Kenny.
Just trying to make Ray smile. That's all we're trying to do. Just make that fucking guy smile. Let's bring on our executive producer, Cody Merrow, for the pronunciation of the week. I mean, what's up with like the Longo blind shot three? I mean, can we get
walked into a hornet's nest today, huh?
I mean, you are. Your eyes
John
don't look
sleeps
as
in his
clear.
Bed.
Oh, Cody, I want to get your
I have
take.
Contact lenses, so that's why my eyes are red.
Cody, I want to get your take. You saw the Muchinho fight?
I did.
Okay,
yeah.
So you in the chat you said it was only 28 strikes. Now, I couldn't tell the tone of it if you meant like did you think it should have been stopped?
He was walking blind out there. I mean, at one point, you know, you can just tell, and I'm sure as a ref you're 2 or 3 feet away, you have a much better, you know, interpretation than anybody, but yeah, I mean, like it was only 28 strikes, but they were all
big shots.
You know, head banger. Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh my gosh. I mean, jeez. It's like, but a fucking
gotta save fighters from themselves, man. Sometimes.
Yeah, no, I thought it made sense. And it seemed like there was less of a protest from Moutinho than there was when he fought Sean O'Malley, but he did protest nonetheless. Yeah. But yeah.
Tough Massachusetts boy.
I'm telling, too tough for his own good. Ken Flo, yeah. That kid there. All right, Cody. Well, Jack Shore is fighting this man this weekend. We're not going to ask you to pronounce Jack Shore, but it's a fighter that's trained a lot in New Jersey, Dagestan roots. Who am I talking about?
I believe this is Timur Valiyev.
All right, let's hear him say it.
Timur Lucky Valiyev. Timur Lucky Valiyev.
It's good enough for me, Cam Flo. I mean, I don't know what you think.
He didn't give me the Timur.
Yeah. Come on, Timur. I can't roll my R's. I'm too white for that.
It's Timur, not Timur.
Mur.
Okay. Well, we'll give it to him. We'll give it to you.
Like, I love, Timur. Right? I like Ken Flo. He's not a dictator, but Ken Flo not afraid to. Like,
when Kenny does chime in, you know it's important. That's the thing. Like, he's not going to nickel and dime you, but when it comes to, you know, full quarters, he's going to come at you.
All right, well, a furious stretch for the UFC continues this weekend as the UFC returns to London for the first time in a hell of a long time. Let's make some picks. Let's get to the main event challenge.
It's the main event challenge. Anik.
The time is most definitely now.
Florian.
I finished fights. I'm going to do everything possible to win.
The main event challenge. The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
It is time for the main event challenge as we welcome on Brian Petrie from the MMA Takes podcast. What kind of t-shirt do you wear? Cincinnati Reds. What kind of champions does that say?
1990. It's been a while. 1990 is when we got it. Yeah.
Is that a world? Is that a World Series?
World Series shirt. Yeah, 1990. That's right.
I like that, man.
Yeah,
I like
that.
So how you doing, man? You had another good week. How's everything going? All right.
Going well. Kenny got me this week with Roundtree, but I hit my, I'm 5-1 on this parlay I give out. I'm crushing it, making some moves. Just bought a fridge with some of the gammon money. Fridge went on the fridge.
Nice.
So, you know, we're making moves out here with some.
You are making moves. You
know? We almost hit that McKinney pick, by the way.
Oh,
that was,
man, I can't. Drew Dober. I mean, if he didn't have a chin like a fucking Buick, I mean, it's over. Crazy. Right? Yeah. I mean, the guy is tough.
Yeah, really that prevented Ken Flo from sweeping the board at 6-0. Any major takeaways for you, Brian, on the fight card before we move on? I mean, the main event I thought was just okay. We were talking about Chris Moutinho on the wrong end of some violence. Khalil Roundtree Jr., anything jump off the card for you before we move on?
Javi Basharat is a stud, first off. Trevin Jones, that was the best we've seen Trevin Jones. He looked unbelievable. Moutinho, I had no problem with the stoppage. I mean, the guy was a punching bag in there, unfortunately. And then the main event really fell short for me as well. I'm high on Ankalaev. I just felt like, you know, when you get these main event spots in a high-profile fight, you got to do a little. I know you want to win, but you got to do a little more. And I felt like if he really opened his hands up, he would have done okay, but he caught staring a few times. I mean, Santos is a big, powerful dude, but I don't know if he's going to leapfrog the line there. I mean, maybe one more before he gets a title shot, but, and Khalil Roundtree is a fucking savage dude.
Ooh,
God. So I had the pick of Robertson and I had him by sub at +800, but when you lose and then you lose in that way by the savagery of Khalil and then the great message he did after the fight, I'm okay with it. You know what I mean? I mean, that was violence and it was awesome.
And you crushed your methods of victory. I mean, you had Yusuf by decision, Song Yadong by knockout. Overall, it was a productive night. We mentioned Ken Flo going 5-1. BP goes 4-2. So Team Anik now is in the black, picking every fight essentially on every main card in the black right now, +1.2 units. And Ken Flo almost there, -0.4. So a big week for the Flo as he picks up 4 points or so. And we've got 4 fights to pick coming up this weekend for UFC London. Don't forget the matinee stat time there on the East Coast on ESPN Plus. First fight for us, Gunnar Nelson, -365. Takashi Sato, former Bilal Muhammad victim, is +280. So Gunny hasn't fought since a loss to Gilbert Burns all the way back in 2019 in Denmark. So he ends a 2.5-year layoff here. Was to face Claudio Silva. Instead, it will be the late replacement Sato. He hasn't fought since a loss to Caramel Thunder, Miguel Baeza. That was late 2020. Brian Petrie, Gunnar Nelson, Takashi Sato. Who do you have?
First off, these colors don't run, but I am so excited that the UFC is back in London. European crowds, Australian crowds, even the Canadian crowds. I mean, they're electric. And it's good. I mean, they're going to tear down the fucking roof. I'm happy to see Gunnar Nelson back. You know, it's been a while. I had to look him up. I thought maybe he just took a break, maybe burnt out. But apparently he had some rib injuries that wouldn't heal and got injured again. It's been almost 2.5-3 years. I really was going to go Claudio Silva in this fight. We've seen Gunnar Nelson fight a guy on the ground who's very, very good. And he struggled. I mean, albeit it was Damian Maia, he survived, but he's a little outclassed. I mean, Maia's in a different level. But I'm happy to see Gunnar back. You know, he's got that weird karate style. It, you know, he blitzes really fast. He's packed some power for being an undersized guy at 170. I do think Gunnar Nelson, maybe early in his career, not now, because he's getting, you know, his ages, whatever, but 55 would have been a really sweet spot for him. Maybe even 65 if they had that. But I like Claudio Silva in that matchup. Now you enter Takashi Sato, and it's, you know, a guy who packs a lot of power, but just doesn't really have much on the ground. You know what I mean? If you get caught lacking on Sato, he'll send you the fuck home. I mean, quick. But yeah. I like Gunnar Nelson here by choke. He has really good chokes. Sato's coming off a choke loss, and Gunny has, you know, he's got them all. So give me Gunnar Nelson by sub here. Probably early. I think he's going to jump on him early and do it. Probably round one.
All right. Yeah, hard to know what is going on with Sato right now, Ken Flo, if I'm being honest. Six wins for Gunnar Nelson have been by submission. We'll see what version he presents this weekend. Your thoughts on Nelson and Sato on the main card?
Well, that's why, you know, I think anything less than a submission by Gunny would be a little bit of a disappointment, in my opinion. I think Gunny is extremely talented. What concerns me sometimes, he gets that head up a little bit too high when he trades sometimes and watches his work. And against a guy like Sato who can crack, he'll take your head off and he'll put you to sleep for sure. But I think this is a good fight for Gunny. He should be able to take this one to the mat. And get a submission relatively early in this fight. So, yeah, Gunny for the win.
You mentioned some of the rib injuries for Gunnar Nelson. I will never complain about a rib injury after what Chance Rencounter has been through recently. Ken Flo, did you see I reposted that? He absorbed a body kick, I believe, in Bellator and broke like 5 or 6 ribs. Dude. One of the more recent posts, and he needed to, you know, I've had a couple rib injuries in the last year or so. I shouldn't even be talking about it, but he had to have like a bunch of metal put in his body to like, yeah, bro.
I've never heard that.
It was nasty.
Off a kick.
Dude.
Off a body
spinning,
kick.
Spinning back kick, heel right. I mean, it was a perfect shot. It was nasty, dude.
Bro. Yikes. Yeah. I got to think Ken Flo is going to be texting the group later. But thankfully, Chance Rencounter is home and out the other side. But that was ugly. Because I kept thinking, like, dude, they got to do something surgically, like,
right,
invasively, because he can't do anything. Like, I'm sitting here with minor, like, torn rib cartilage, and I'm, you know, paralyzed. Yeah. This dude has his whole rib cage, fucking all of them, just snapped on a line. Absolutely
not.
That's
insane.
Yeah. All right. Paddy Pimblett is back in your living room this Saturday. He's a -410 favorite against Kazula Vargas, who is +310. Pimblett won his UFC debut against Luigi Vendramini. Now he draws Vargas, who is coming off a win over Rong Zhu. That was UFC 261 almost a year ago. Any slip up for Pimblett here as a big favorite this weekend? Bri, what do you think?
You know, the number's heavy. I mean, I get it. Pimblett's the next star. Paddy the baddie, baby. I love him. And listen, next big star, huge fall in the UK, signed with Barstool Sports, one of the first MMA or the only MMA guy signed with Barstool Sports. He's making money moves out there, and he looks like a fucking member of the Beatles on steroids. Yeah. The haircut is, I mean, I love it. I know John doesn't like lettuce, but you got to appreciate that lettuce on Paddy the Baddie. And I don't want to offend the C words, the casuals out there. People get very sensitive. But Paddy the Baddie, you know, I know he came over a knockout over Luigi Vendramini, but he's a ground guy. I mean, that's his bread and butter. He's not this brawler from Liverpool. Like, he is cerebral, and he's good on the ground. But the problem is, I think his wrestling struggles a little bit. I want to see his wrestling get up, because once he gets there, he's very good. I'm going to let Kenny with the good hair dissect his jiu-jitsu, because that's not my fucking – that's not my lane. But I do think he's pretty good. He has some, you know, 7 wins by submission, a lot of ground and pound finishes on his record. Obviously coming off the electric KO over Luigi Vendramini. And Kazula Vargas, you know, he's got the beach muscles. He's 1-2 in the UFC. Really, he could probably be 2-1. I mean, the Brock Weaver illegal knee, that was – he was dominant. dominant in that fight, but he looked good against Ronju. He looked controlled. He looked measured. You know, he's a little wild in there. He's strong. He kind of, he's got some chokes to his name as well, but I think he's going to struggle with the pace of Paddy. Paddy the Batty is going to be on fire in London. I think Paddy's going to put it on him. He's got unique kicks. His striking's not refined, but he does have some kind of funky kicks, and he obviously shown he's got some power. But I think once he gets to the ground, I think he'll struggle in the first round getting to the ground. I like Paddy the finish here. Whatever your book has as a better line, whether sub or ground and pound, hammer that, because 410 is heavy. But I do love me some Paddy the Batty.
All right, good handicap there. Paddy the Batty. Minus 410, Ken Flo. What do you think?
Petrie always has good info. I don't have a whole lot to add, but I absolutely agree with him. And the good news is, Brian, that he has been, Paddy has been working with Justin Flores over in San Diego. Justin Flores, phenomenal judoka and wrestler. He's been helping a lot of guys over, you know, in Southern California for a long time now. Dominic Cruz, one of them, who's been working with him. So, yeah, so J Flo's doing a great job. I think Paddy's been really hammering that wrestling, and I agree. I think that's where he's going to be safest and where he's at his best. You know, sometimes he gets a little crazy, right? The boy from Liverpool starts trading in the pocket, and we saw him even get hurt in that first fight. So he's not afraid of getting hit, but that concerns me. And I think in this fight, yeah, he's got to take Vargas to the ground, and I think he'll do that and be able to get a sub.
All right, co-main event, Dan Hooker back at 145 pounds. He is a minus 120 favorite. Arnold Allen, the even money underdog, at plus 100. So Hooker back at featherweight after a 12-fight run at lightweight. He was 8-4 in those fights. Last featherweight fight for him came against Mississippi Mean, Jason Knight. He lost that fight November of 2016. Obviously, Brian, we're making this selection about 6 days before the fight. There's the fight before the fight on the scale for Dan Hooker, but ultimately your thoughts on him at featherweight and how he fares here against the credentialed Arnold Allen.
You know, I like Dan Hooker, but I don't like the move back down to 45. He's got a big frame on him. I liked him at 55. I know you're having some losses, so maybe you want to mix your career up a little bit. Maybe some more shots down here. But I actually think his frame fits 170 at a little size. You don't see a lot of guys do that. Maybe it's a strength issue. Maybe he does train with 70s and go, maybe I can't compete with these guys. But, you know, the weight cut on top of the fact that he has faded before in fights is a recipe to just fade this guy. You know what I mean? I just don't know. I've seen pictures of him. He's obviously doing the weight cut right, but it worries me. He has been in there with some of the best guys at 55 and look good. I mean, that Poirier fight sticks out in my mind. That was an amazing fight. He slowed down, Poirier took over. And then you got Arnold Allen, who's been in the UFC since 2015, which is wild to me. And I go, how's this guy been around for so long? And, you know, he fights once a year. The only year he had two fights in the UFC was 2019. He fights once a year, disappears. At 145, the stacked division, you can't do that. You have to be front and center or people, idiots like me, forget you. But he's very good. He's coming off a good win over Sadiq Yusuf. And the thing about Allen is he pushes a really good pace. Sometimes he might not be able to keep up his own pace, but he pushes a good pace and he mixes things up very well. If you want to strike, he'll take you down. If you want to start grappling, he'll strike with you. It's very interesting. And this is a tough fight. Vegas got the line right. I'm going to lean Allen. You know, this is in London. I'm going to go Allen by decision here. You give me a slight dog in London, I'm going to take it. So I like Allen by decision in a competitive fight. I think it's going to come down to the third round.
Beautifully set up there by Brian Petrie. Ken Flo, I would lay off of this fight. I just think there are too many unknowns here. Ultimately, a huge spot for both men. Your thoughts on the co-main event? And ultimately, we will need a winner, Dan Hooker or Arnold Allen.
Yeah, listen, I think this is a fascinating fight for a lot of different reasons. Arnold Allen is an excellent striker, definitely has some pop in his punches. The way he puts it together, I think, has looked pretty good here in the UFC. And I am concerned about that weight cut for Dan Hooker, as Brian said. So that's going to be a tricky one. However, all things considered, assuming it goes well for him, I think his height and reach is going to be a problem for Arnold Allen. And I think if Allen can't get his timing and can't get his combinations going, I think it's going to throw him off. And Dan Hooker has that size and reach and knows how to use it. He circles well when he's on point with his game. And he's not too shabby on the ground either. So I think it should be an interesting fight. It'll be a close fight, but I like Dan Hooker here. But of course, that weight cut's going to be crucial to his success.
Yeah, it's an interesting career move. I do believe 55 is his wheelhouse, but he knows he can make featherweight. But it is an interesting decision for Dan Hooker, given all the success that he realized at lightweight. Even if he didn't see a championship trajectory there, I just felt like there were a lot of big fights still at 55, main event type fights. But we'll see. Pushing the reset button this weekend against Arnold Allen. All right, main event at heavyweight. Alexander Volkov minus 120. Tommy Aspinall is the even money underdog plus 100. Aspinall still just 28 years old, 4-0 in the UFC, so really just getting going. On the other side, Volkov, as tested in the UFC and otherwise, Brian, as any heavyweight out there, 34-9 overall and has some momentum as well. He's won three of his last four. Volkov, the slight favorite, or Aspinall, the slight dog for you, kid?
I don't get, you know, being a bigger guy myself, you know, I should really hype up the heavyweights. I usually don't get that. I'm excited, man. Yeah. Listen, Tom Aspinall, I'm a bit biased here. I'm going to come a little clean here. You know, he's won me a lot of money and he's looked great in UFC. Now I know two of his wins were Collier, who's a middleweight, who's up the heavyweight, and Alan Boudou, who doesn't have a win in the UFC. But the finish over Andrei Arlovski was great. You know, he had a rough first round, and a lot of freight trains, when they lose the first round, are not going the way they want. They kind of freak out. We kind of see it with Terrence McKinney a little bit, not throwing shots at McKinney. But he didn't. He says, you know what? I'm going to come out. I'm going to take him down and submit him. The only other guy to submit Arlovski was Josh Barnett. You know what I mean? And then Sergei Spivak, who's a stud, who gets a little underrated, I think, at times, maybe a little chinny, but he finished him in the first round. It's you know, it's great. I mean, Tom Aspinall, boxing, on point. BJJ, on point. Looks like Frank Mir's son. On point. I mean, this guy has it all. And then you got Volkov, whose resume is just too long to list. He's been a champ at other organizations. He's fought everyone. He's 6'7". Every time I think he fights, I feel like he's 7'3", because that's how he fights. Rangy guy. His front kick's amazing. Punches on you. It's hard to get on him. The big knock on him was just take him down. Just take him down, right? Curtis Blaydes did. But he sized up. He's really kind of nipped that in the butt. And Aspinall, again, coming from that Liverpool camp, coming from the Darren Till camp, what kind of wrestling does he have? That's what I want to know. We know he's got some jiu-jitsu skills. What kind of wrestling does he have? He's a big kid too. He's 6'5". But listen, I think Aspinall's the guy here. He's the future of heavyweight contenders. He's so fast. He moves his feet really well. His boxing's on point. His moves on point. He seems within himself as well. His post-fight interviews seems humble. He's not like, you know, bashful or whatever. He's just seems like he's putting his head down and working. But I do see value on Volkov at minus 120. I thought he might have been a little bit of a favorite. I thought I was going to steal something from Vegas here. But I like Tommy Aspinall. I like him a late TKO finish. The one caveat I have, though, is this is his first five-round fight. This is the biggest step up in competition and five rounds, so we got to be careful. But I think the sky's the limit for Aspinall.
Yeah, I do, too. I think he's going to grapple, but he has a lot of skills on which he can lean. Ken Flo, how do you have the main event playing up?
Yeah, listen, I think for Aspinall, it's going to be interesting to see if this fight goes past the third round, how he responds. And again, he's fighting in England. That could be a blessing and a curse. That could, of course, buoy a fighter, but it can also put a lot of pressure on a fighter as well. So really curious to see how he handles the main event spot in England, and how he deals with a very tall fighter in Volkov, who has gone the distance, who knows what it's like to get into those championship rounds. So big spot for Aspinall. I think he has a ton of potential. What concerns me sometimes is when he gets caught trading. And oftentimes he's the faster guy. He's the more athletic guy. So he gets away with it. Has to be careful here against Volkov, who also knows how to utilize those long range weapons. So I will go with Aspinall here. I do think he has more potential than Volkov. I think he's a better athlete. I think he's going to be faster and needs to utilize that, but also pace himself for this five-round fight just in case. So, and I think this is one of those fights for those that are betting where you kind of want to put your money on the underdog here. Yeah. And right now, I believe Aspinall is the underdog. Right?
He is. Yeah. He absolutely is.
Let's go with Aspinall as well. I wish I could go the other way. I hate agreeing with Brian, but the kid's right. The kid is right.
Yeah. All right, so this week it'll be decided on the Hooker-Allen co-main event. That is the lone fight of dissension. If you want more from Brian Petrie, it is at MMA Takes Podcast. That's hey, right. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday, man. We got some merchandise coming your way as well. So
awesome. I love the wear.
Cincinnati Reds loud and proud. I got a Reds t-shirt I'll maybe pull out for you next week.
Baseball's back. I had a jersey, a Johnny Bench throwback. I almost wore it, but I'm like, I'm going to go t-shirt instead.
Maybe wait for opening day.
There you go. Perfect. There you go.
Yeah. All right, Bri. Hey, have a great rest of the weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, boys. See ya.
Good stuff.
There he is, Brian Petrie, with us here on the Anik and Florian podcast. And that puts a bow on episode 340. If you want to get in on the new merchandise that I'm wearing today, AnikFlorianPodcast.com. Check our social media for promotional codes. Also, don't forget One More Sleep merchandise at millions.co. Remember the show with Bilal Muhammad and Jason Anik coming up this Thursday. May just have a UFC champion on the program. KennyFlorianMartialArts.com for all your jiu-jitsu essentials. Cannot recommend that enough. If you are a fighter, a commentator, a fan, and you want a more intricate, or if you're a practitioner, really. I mean, if you're a practitioner like me, KennyFlorianMartialArts.com. And we are back with you next week. Next Sunday, we'll recap the UFC's return to London and, of course, preview that March 26th show coming up in Columbus, Ohio. Main event there, Chris Daukaus and Curtis Razor Blades. Thanks to Ray Longo and Brian Petrie. For our producer, Cody Merrill, Ken Flom, John Anderson. So long for now. Thanks for watching, listening, subscribing. We will talk to you next week. Until then, yo later.
I'm Royal Oaks. Next time on Too Many Lawyers, we take on a couple of villains to sort out whether bad stuff is also illegal stuff. George Santos won a seat in Congress by lying to voters, but is that a crime? And Kanye West made it clear he hates Jews. In England, he'd go to jail for that. Here in America, did he commit a hate crime? Listen to Too Many Lawyers on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family, and 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckley SAB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.